I like that introduction. Makes me feel important. Where I come from in Berlin, Mass., people in AA call me John the Indian. I don't really believe that's the reason why I am an alcoholic, although I still have a reservation. I always like to tell an intellectual joke before I start. I feel very special, and very grateful about AA. I would have never believed that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, if someone had told me that if I should stay sober, that one day I would receive a call or a letter from Ben Holloway from Virginia, Beach to Berlin, Mass., where I live, to come up here and speak. Because when I arrived in AA, I was in my late 20s, and I had been away from my home. I was brought up in a little reservation in Canada. Well, my father, when he died, he had to have a gallon of jug under his bed. And 5 years later, we lost 8 members in our family. They're all died with TB, and my mother died when I was 13, and when I was 14, I left home, and I really didn't know where I was going, but Indians in reservation talked about lumber camps in Maine. So I arrived in Maine and walked 26 miles to CC camp, and I got a job washing dishes, where I stayed for 4 years, I left the lumber camp to join the Canadian Army, Canadian Infantry, where I spent 3 years and a half washing more damn dishes. And I took a drink, and I lived in the Skid Row for 7 years. And I was in a mission one night when another Indian friend walked in, a man that I had once met in Tupper Lake, New York. I happened to be traveling through that town. And it was a bar room where all the lumberjacks were drinking, and I had never met him before, but he said he knew my father and that I looked like him. So he brought me to his home, and I met his wife. She was a nurse. And well, it was Ike who lost everything and wound up in Salvation Army in Syracuse, New York, and started to attend an AA meeting. And someone told him that I was in a mission sober. So he walked in, and he says to me, would you like to go to an AA meeting? And I said, no. And although I was sitting there with long hair and wine sores and dirty, I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. And besides, I've learned in the program that I have always been a super sensitive person. I get hurt easily and I don't suffer well. And when I'm not dressed, I don't like to go anywhere, not especially when I have wine sores. But I says to me, well, they have coffee and donuts and they're free. So I said, let's go. And here I was in an AA meeting. As I walked in through the doors in AA, there was a man stood there, and he was a lawyer. He became a great friend sometimes later. But his job in Central Group was to shake hands to everyone who walked in. And as I was walking through the doors of AA with my long hair and my wine sores and dirty, he rushed over and he grabbed my hand with his two hands. And he says to me, am I so glad to see you? And I sit down. And my first speaker in AA was a lady judge. And she was saying something very funny like, if you are new, please try to identify. Now, can you imagine me identifying with a lady judge? You know. And it isn't that I have never met a judge before. You know. I met one particular judge 43 times, and he never once asked me to try to identify. Last time I met him, I thought he was very touching. He calls me John. And night before, I have just accepted Christ as my personal Savior in a mission. And next morning, I'm facing Judge Dorsey. And he said, John, do you know how many times you've been up here? And you know, when we drink the way we do, we really don't count. But he had a sheet of paper, and he says to me, you've been here 43 times. And I said, no wonder he looked familiar. So he says to me that, you know, he said that the Fayette Park here in the city, it's for the decent people to go there on Sundays, and it's not for the bums like you. Then he says, you Indians, you know, you're all alike. He says, you come to this city, you get a job, and you work for 1 week, you get paid, then you go out and get drunk. And he said, look at your record. You always get me into a fight. And then he took his glasses off, and when Judge Dorsey took his glasses off, I know damn well I wasn't saved. He gave me 6 months in Jimmyville. And I said to myself, well, he never liked Indians anyway. Because he was bald-headed. I just remembered a lady speaker this morning. I felt maybe my great-grandfather got to him first before I did, and he got to pick that. And I'm sitting in a meeting listening to a lady judge. And she talked about her father being a judge, and her husband is a doctor and a director to a hospital in Syracuse. And here I am in my first meeting, in my late 20s, and never been married, never owned a car, couldn't read and write, listening to a woman that I don't even understand. She says that she always opened her talk like this. She says, it's a mental obsession that precedes the first drink and wants to take a drink now is coupled with a physical compulsion. That's not to drive you to drink. And I said to myself, if this is a disease, it sure is high class, and I don't belong here. But there are many things have been said this morning about love. And the only thing that I can say, I'm sober today. Whoever planned my first meeting, planned it well. On the other hand, I suppose if you'd seen me laying in the sidewalk day after day with long hair and wine sores and dirty, he would have never stopped and say, now there lies a perfectionist. You know, I never wanted to be like my father. Because my father was a drunk, and as a kid, of course, I didn't understand. And, you know, it's kind of sad to say that I was kind of glad when he died. And that's why I never took a drink for 21 years in my life. In this country, you looked upon drinking as a social thing, not so to the reservation where I was born. The people that you like and you can trust when they are sober, you cannot trust them when they are drinking. And I remember my mother locking the door. The same people used to come to our house that you respect and people that you trust are the same people, but they were drinking. And my mother would lock the door, and of course it didn't help any because they come through the doors anyway. And I never wanted to be that type of a person. And of course, when my father died, we were poor, and 5 years later, we lost 8 members in our family. And when I was 13, my mother was dying. And first time for a long time, I listened to Ramona today, and I was remembering my own mother. There were 2 of us left, and I was sleeping with her when I was a kid, and I remember asking her if I was going to die too. And she says to me, no, she says, you know, you're very strong, and I'm so happy that you never cry. Because I have 2 brothers who used to cry all night and before they died. And after my mother died, I stayed in this old house for another year, living there alone with a dog. My people were afraid that I had TB. And in those days, nobody liked you if you had TB. But Indians in reservation talked about lumber camp. And that in that 1 year that I slept in this between 2 mattresses in this old house, I used to say to myself that one day I will leave home and I will find me a nice home and I'll buy nice clothes and I'll have a nice car and nice job and nice girl. Because I felt that if you could have these things, then your feelings would change inside. That you feel the way that you thought other people felt who have these things. So I have never in my life considered suicide like I have heard some speakers. I have always wanted to live from the time I could remember. Much of my living was in a dream. So I left home. I grabbed a freight. And I arrived in Patton, Maine, and I walked into this office, and I was told that I might get a job or gotten started. And there were old people in this camp, and they needed somebody, so I walked in there, and sure enough, I got a job, and I met a man who was a good man, followed by the name of Bill Langster, who took me to his home. He had 3 daughters, where I stayed in weekends, and it was his family who told him 4 years later that it was not healthy for me to live there with the older people, and that I should leave and join the younger people. So he talked to me one morning, and I thought it was a good idea. I felt that I will go to Quebec City because I wanted to go back home to my reservation. But I didn't want to go back. Nothing. I thought maybe that if I can put my uniform, people will know that I have changed and now I have become something. And like my boss says, who knows, John? You might win a medal or two. And I thought that it was a good idea. I was hoping maybe I can win a medal without getting hurt, because I'm a super sensitive person. I get hurt easily and I don't suffer well. But I went to the Quebec City and I joined the Canadian Infantry. But because I never went to school and because I couldn't read and write, I couldn't go on training. So they gave me a job washing dishes. And in my recovery, I have been given a new vision, an education that allows me to look back in my own life. And when I do today, I can see so much that I know I passed by in life. There is nothing wrong washing dishes, even in the Canadian Army. I mean, if you're washing dishes tonight, it's all right. I'm just saying, I'm glad it's you and not me. But there is nothing wrong. But I felt in those days that if you wash dishes, then you're not as good as another person. And that is a sick way of thinking, because we learn in our recovery that quality of man, it comes not whether you wash dishes or president in a bank. The quality don't come because you have a degree or because you never went to school. But you see, I was sick, and my sickness was that I want to be as good. I wanted to be somebody else. Now, my plans changed. I never went home because I didn't want my people to know that I washed dishes in Canadian Army. I never even went out with a girl, and I was old enough to know that I should go out with a girl. I mean, I'm a sick person, not stupid. And you don't learn everything in school. But I was ashamed that if I go out with a girl, she find out that I was washing dishes. So I had problems, like I couldn't join the younger people. And I got my discharge. I was 21 years old. And this friend of mine, we just bought each a suit. And he says to me, let's you and I go to a nightclub. We'll have a few drinks and we'll meet some girls. And I thought it was a good idea. So we did. We went to a Fleury Cafe in Montreal, where they had a nice orchestra and the girls sing there. And I was all dressed up and I had a couple of $100 in my pocket and I took a drink. And that's when my world changed. And because, as you probably know, when I drank, I just knew the way I felt, that I will never be like my father. And that's, again, alcoholism. Because the program, even, doesn't matter, I guess, but the program thus teaches you to be yourself. When I drank, I felt good inside. I think first time in my life I could sit down to the people next to me that I had never known before and start talking. And I honestly thought that I made a good sense. I became very intelligent when I drank, you know. And this feeling of not having an education, it never entered in my mind. And this idea that I washed dishes disappeared. When I drank, I felt good. And if you didn't like me, you had problems. I was just the opposite when I was sober. If you didn't like me, I had problems. And so if someone had told me that, John, if you drink this stuff, you will live in the Skid Row for 7 years, I would have never believed. All I knew, that first time in my life, I felt belong. And like my boss said, I joined the younger people. I went out with a girl, first night I got drunk. Christ, it was about time. First time I was able to enjoy my God-given desires and instincts, they have been one of my greatest enemies. And I didn't get up in the morning and say, Christ, this will kill me. There's something about an education in AA that perhaps couldn't come anywhere else. Because now that I'm 52 years old, and I have always told my age because I know I wear it well, but, I look back with my education in AA, and I can see that while on one hand that booze gave me freedom, on the other, it started to rob me right away because I have never been a social drinker. I was as much as alcoholic the night I took my first drink as I was when I arrived here after living in the Skid Row for 7 years. I was powerless over one drink. A lot of things in my life has changed since then. But what happened to me tonight I took my first drink has not changed. And nothing that I can do will change that. And I know that. Except today, I don't mind. But I was powerless. The difference at the end of my drinking is progression. And there's something about progression that all of us can understand. I don't know. I am sure you're a type of people that you go to any AA meetings. There's some of you probably come from a very nice home, and that you had a good mother and good father who taught you about how to live a good life. There are probably some people here who wear a Roman collar. I don't know how long it takes to get that, but it must take a lot of discipline and a lot of faith. A lot of dedication. Some of you, I'm sure, are well educated. I still haven't gone to school. I don't know any big words, so I know one or two. And I might use one later on. Because a crowd like this, I think it's important to use a big word every once in a while. There's always somebody who's educated beyond his intelligence, and then he helps me. So we are not people who are stupid without education or without dedication or direction. What I'm saying is that if you are an alcoholic, to progression in his own time, in his own way, will strip you, no matter who taught you. He will strip you. And it all starts by being powerless over that drink. I know that today. I didn't know that when I arrived here. When I listened to that lady judge, the reason I didn't identify it was because I was just an Indian who never went to school, who worked 4 years in lumber camp washing dishes, and who was in 3.5 years in the Kenyan Army washing more damn dishes. I didn't even understand the big words she was talking about. I mean, fair enough. You know, it's beautiful today. I walked in at noontime today looking for lunch, and as I was walking by, some gentleman from Washington, D.C., Tom S., Oh, he's got a big sign here, said Tom Smith. I mean, I'm not breaking his anonymity. I'm only telling you what is marked here. I sit down. They call me over. I sit down, and Frank, he was sitting there, and I just assumed they're both well-educated people. They're from Washington. They're probably lawyers. Of course, they have other things in Washington, too. And, you know, I sit down there, and I order a meal, and we're talking like we knew each other, and I was very comfortable. And again, the thing that I might bring out later about the spirit of being equal, that it is not unreal. So we sit down and we talk with the ladies, and after we finished, the waiter came along and he gives a check, and he just signed it. Nice. Better than Rescue Mission. Then he came to me, and he gives me a check, and I sign mine. And you know why I felt good? Because Ben told me when I arrived last night, John, from now on, anything you want, just sign your name. And I said to myself, geez, I wish if I could tell that to John. It feels good. It really is. You know, to be able to sit there and just sign your name and give it to a ticket to a waiter. It's a feeling that you are part of something that I have never felt in my life. But I like to get back to my drinking. When I was 23, I arrived in Skid Row. And I stayed there for 7 years. But there were times in those 7 years that I wanted to stop drinking. One time, Tom in Rescue Mission, there was another fella who was a good man. He wanted to help a lot of drunks. He was a religious man who ran the mission. He told me one day that there was a fella by the name of Billy Green who was coming to that city. Said, this man helps an awful lot of people. You go there and listen to him, and he will help you. And I did. I listened to Billy Green for a long time, and I think I was sober 28 or even 30 days. And oftentimes I said, if Billy Green stayed for the whole year, perhaps I would have been sober for the whole year. But he left, and I got drunk. And a few days later, Judge Darcy gave me 6 months in Jimmyville. And I said, that's the last time I'm going to listen to Billy Green. And the last time when I wanted to stop drinking, I was in a mission. I was sick. And I went to attend services because if you attend services, Tom will always give you a bed, no matter how many times you go there. And I knew that. But while I was sitting there, a fellow got up and he said that for many years he was a bum just like us. He must have been a very spiritual man. He said that he accepted Christ as his own personal savior. And since then, he got married, bought a station wagon, he got a job. And then he says, any of you boys can do the same thing. All you have to do is move forward and accept Christ as his personal savior. And I guess it touched me because I have always felt that if you could have these things, you would feel different inside. So I moved forward, and I knew nothing about Christ. Nobody ever taught me anything about Christ. I spent 4 years in lumber camp, and I used to listen to lumberjacks talking about him. And by the time they finished with him, you wouldn't believe him either. But here I was, and this guy was sincere. He put his arms around me, and he says to me, John, you're safe. That's when I met Judge Dorsey the next morning, who gave me 6 months again. And it's very, very confusing. I think Ramona explained it better than I can about the disease of alcoholism. Very, very confusing. And when I came in here, my problem was that I thought I was different. And after the meeting, I was leaving. But this lawyer who stood at the door, he'd been watching me, and I was leaving. He grabbed my hand, he put his arms around me, and he says, "I have some friends here. I want you to meet them." And his friends in AA worked very hard trying to convince me that I belonged here. And I knew that. And again, we go back, I think, to the love that we talked about this morning and the understanding. And of course, I was hungry for these things. So you might say that what touched me in my first meeting, perhaps something much greater than the words could have given me about the nature of my sickness. I felt that I belonged here. It's been a long time ago, and that's what I was describing to you a while ago when I met these two people from Washington. I travel and I look out and I see only the strange faces. But in heart, I have always feel that I belong. And I came back to AA because I was lonely. And I liked the way I was treated. When I wanted to say something, people listened, and I liked that. And I came back. And in the early days, it didn't make sense. Didn't make sense. I could not understand. I learned to memorize the pre-album after I was sober 1 month. And of course, every meeting to read the pre-album, I memorized it. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. And it made me feel good that I could memorize it, but I didn't understand what the hell they were talking about. And when they said that AA does not wish to engage in any controversy, I had it figured out. I thought it meant, you can't go to bed with women anymore or something like that. It didn't bother me any because I have not been doing so well. I met the sponsor. My sponsor was a man that I have known a long time. I have met him in Jimmyville. He was a barber there when he was in jail, and I used to wash his floors. But I haven't seen him for a long time. And one night I was in central group, and Pat walks in, all dressed up with a girlfriend. He walks over and he says, "John, I'm your sponsor." And Pat is a man that you never trust, drunk or sober. Because he would steal your shoes, sell them, and buy a drink, and say no hard feelings. And he says to me, "John, I have a new car. I will bring you home tonight." So he brought me to a mission and picked me up every night. And Pat, like so many members, he used to bring me half a sandwich, and he used to say, "John, I could only eat half a sandwich." And years later, when I learned that Pat didn't eat sandwiches. But it's something that I think we talk about this morning. I can identify when we talk about love, because I have met people in my life from the first time I came who cared. And Pat was one of them. After 6 months, bring me to a meeting. He stopped the car one night and he said, "John, I know you're serious in this program, but you can't stay sober and live with those bums. You have to get out of there." And I didn't want to leave the mission because it was the only place where I felt I was with people like myself. and I couldn't identify with these people who walk around talking about the mental obsession that precedes the first drink. But I guess God was on his side, because the damn place burned down one night, and I went to see Pat, and I said to him, "Pat, mission burned down," and he said, "That's the grace of God." Next morning, he brought me to 12-step house, and I got a job that paid me $7.50 a week and a free lodging. And my job was to wash and wax floors, make coffee, answer the telephone, and wash dishes. And I think one of my friend's benefits today, not only did I have learned to live like a white man, dollar down and dollar a week, but I bought me a dishwasher. You know, I still have a nice feeling inside. Sometimes I push the button and it hums, and I said, "Hum, you cheap bastard." But I got into trouble in 12-step house. There's a girl of There were people who came to that place and play cards all night, some of them. And one night, a girl called that I had never met, but her name was Ann, and she wanted help. And so I told them that there was someone who needed help. But when they found out who she was, they told me, "Well, she's been around a long time, and all she does is use people in the program." And even though I was sick, I knew it was wrong. But my problem has always been, I like what Father Martin says, that we are rational people. We must learn to function with our intellect. That the man must base his decisions on what he believes and not what he feels. Most of my life, I have always reacted because you hurt my feelings. And Ramona again said that. And when I didn't like what they said, I upset the table. And I punched one of them right in his mouth. And knocked him down right on his ass, too. And that was my first 12-step call. But there were five of them. And they opened the door and they threw me out. And I'm walking down the Fayette Street, sober, over a year. No job and no home and no money. But again, you know, Pat came by, picked me up, and he brought me to his home. And next morning he brought me to Major Harvey in Salvation Army. There I got a job on a truck for $1 a week, where I stayed for a year and a half, and went to meetings every night, and then I started to travel. I wound up in Buffalo, New York, hanged around in the slave market over there, and I got a job unloading strawberries for rich ice cream. Went to meetings every night. I have always felt good in AA meetings. I never understood. You know, when I was sober 5 years, I was still living in Skid Row. I was almost 35 years old. And 1 o'clock in the morning, I arrived in Marlboro, Mass. I didn't even know the name of the town, Marlboro, Mass. I have been walking since at the age of 14. I've been through hundreds of towns. Didn't matter, because I wasn't going anyplace. 1 o'clock in the morning, I arrived there, and I was a stranger. And I went to the hotel, and I went to men's room and I stayed there all night. But Marlboro has been a turning point in my life. It was the last town I stopped traveling. And from then on, my story has been the story of finding a new life. A couple of weeks later, I was having a lunch in this restaurant owned by the member of AA, when the waiters asked me if I knew of any contractor in town that could remodel and paint her house. Yes, I said, I do. I said, me. She said, I didn't know that you're a contractor. I said, I didn't either. She said, would you come over and give me an estimate? I did. Gave her an estimate to paint her house for $300. And I got the job. And I went back and I told Paul, I got a job, but I don't have any money to start. He says, why don't you go back and ask Rita? She might give you enough money to start your business. So I went back and she gave me $100. So I went out and I bought me a cover house, because I thought if you are going to be a president in your own company, you might as well buy a white coverall. And I bought some paint and a scraper and hammer, and I carried everything to the job. And I met a member of AA who worked in the telephone company, and I borrowed a 60-foot ladder, because this place was so huge. It's an undertaking place today. And I got it up there, and you know, this house was so thick that I couldn't reach the peak. So I find some old lumber under the porch, and I carried it up there, and I built a scaffold right on top of the 60-foot ladder. And that's where I start my business, right close to heaven. And for change, everybody was looking up. My next house was, I met a plumber in AA who lived in Sudbury, Mass., which was only 7 miles from where I lived. Said, John, I have a ranch house. In my house, he said, all you need is a 10-foot stepladder. So I borrowed a 10-foot stepladder and got all my drop cloths together and my paint and my white coveralls, and I stood in the corner and I stopped the bus. And this man, he stopped and he looks up my ladder and then he looks at me. He said, are you serious? And I said, I am. I'm self-employed and I have no other means of getting to work. And I think this guy must have been an Alfie. You know what he says? He says, if I give you a ride, would you promise you'll never do it again? And my next house was the school teacher. Taught school for 40 years, she said. I said to her one day, you think you could teach me how to read and write? She said, I've taught thousands of people how to read and write. So for the next 3 months, I went to see her, and she helped me to memorize the 69 questions. And I had to memorize them because I was afraid I wouldn't pass. But I took the test and I passed. So I went over to see her and I thanked her. And then she says to me, John, why don't you continue on your education? She said, you know, you have an excellent mind. I look back again. Here I was, 35 years old, and I've been away from my reservation since at the age of 14. Spent 4 years in lumber camp washing dishes, and 3 years and a half in Canadian Army washing more damn dishes. Then I lived in the skids for 7 years, never been married, never owned a car, never had a driving license, And not too long ago, I was sleeping in a men's room in a hotel, and this lady trying to convince me that I have an excellent mind. And I couldn't...